Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletow from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Massachusetts is Catherine Sanderson. She is the Poehler Family Professor and Chair of Psychology at Amherst College. She's also the author of Why We Act, Turning Bystanders into Moral Rebels. Professor Sanderson, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation to talk about this really important topic.
Oh, our pleasure. So let's get right into it. One of the most vexing things to compliance and ethics professionals is that they do so much work to convince people to raise their hand and speak out when they see something wrong. And yet, you know, as you know, very few of them do. Why do you think we're so hesitant to come forward?
So I think coming forward when we see bad behavior of any types is really hard because it really gets at fundamental psychological principles. We know from lots of research in psychology that people worry about consequences. They worry about professional and personal consequences for calling out bad behavior by their colleagues, their fraternity brothers, their teammates, and so on. So I think one of the hardest things is getting people to step up and do the right thing when it means confronting bad behavior by a member of their group.
Yeah, which I think we should go back to in a bit. But before we do that, I want to ask one other question, which is, to me, one of the most interesting parts of your book was your discussion about how moral behavior is affected by whether we are alone or in a group. Specifically, people, interestingly enough, are less likely to come forward if others are around. We tend to wait to see what others do first. Since people generally work with and around others, how can we overcome that hesitation?
So I think one of the things that's really important for us all to recognize is that when we're in a group setting, we tend to look to other people to figure out how to react. And if those other people aren't reacting, we assume there must not be a problem because otherwise other people would do something. But what we're not realizing, of course, is that those people are looking to us in exactly the same way. So one of the reasons I love talking about this topic, and one of the reasons I wrote this book, is that helping people understand the psychological factors that inhibit them from acting is a wonderful way of helping people have the courage to speak up. Let me give you a really simple example that I think almost everyone can relate to. Many of us can think of a time in which we were in a college classroom and the professor said, "Do you have any questions?" And you had a question that you wanted to ask, but as you decided whether or not to raise your hand, you looked around to your classmates. And what you saw is no one else raising their hand. So you then decide not to raise your hand because you're convinced that, well, you know, I don't want to look stupid. I'm the only one with a question. I just, you know, won't ask it. But what's interesting is that in that moment, you know why you're not raising your hand. You're not raising your hand because you don't want to look stupid. But when you look at all of your classmates also not raising their hands, you don't think, oh, they don't want to look stupid. No, you think they're smart. They don't have any questions. And to me, that's a really important insight, helping people understand that other people's behavior is driven by fear of embarrassment, looking stupid, just like your own behavior is inhibited by those same factors. And that knowledge can help us raise our hand in class or speak up when we witness bad behavior.
Yeah, I really like that example because I think we've all been in that position where, you know, it took a lot of courage to ask the question. You know, and I think you use the example in the book of the Emperor's New Clothes is that we're all afraid to say it because nobody wants to look bad. So let me also go back to what you're talking about earlier about our sort of group tendencies. It's always struck me that part of the problem is that humans are basically tribal. We're all for coming forward and doing the right thing, unless you're part of my group, in which case you're a traitor. You know, it's really interesting seeing that dynamic in place. You know, that's hard to overcome. But as you point out, it's been done successfully. What can we learn from those who have succeeded in breaking the sort of codes of silence or us versus them mentalities?
So I think there are two things that we can learn. One, and I talk about this at length in Chapter 9, one is we can look to those people who do stand up, who do speak out when they witness bad behavior. So what are their traits? What is common in those people? And what we see time and time again is that these are people who are high in empathy. they're very good at putting themselves in somebody else's shoes, imagining, oh, what if that was me in that situation, or my sister or my child, you know, what would I do? They also tend to be less worried and less self-conscious. So they're not as inhibited by fear of looking stupid. And social inhibition just doesn't seem to play such a big factor. So I think understanding the traits that those people have can help us perhaps foster those traits in ourselves and in other people. But the other thing that I think is really important is that we can take this pressure, this desire to fit in, this tribal nature, as you so eloquently described it, and we can try to use that to our advantage. So one of my favorite examples is research that's actually been done in junior high schools to try to prevent bullying, which of course is a pretty big problem in many school settings. And what they've done is not go through and trained all the students in how not to bully and why bullying is bad. What they've done is they've identified some popular kids in the school, basically norm leaders, social influencers. And they've trained those kids, about 10% of the school population, in how to not bully, in how to be kind to other people, in how to treat people with respect, and so on. And if you get those kids, 10% of the school, acting differently, you actually create a culture shift that pervades the entire school, and overall rates of bullying drop substantially. So what I like about that finding is that it's exactly pulling on people's desire to fit in, to be a part of the group, to be part of the tribe. And yet you don't have to train everyone. What you have to do is get some people to do the right thing. And as long as you pick the right people, you can actually create broad culture change. And that obviously has clear implications for universities, organizations of all types, athletic teams, and so on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the cool kids may be your greatest asset in this approach, contrary to what many might believe. Now, you use an interesting term in the title of the book and throughout, which is a moral rebel. Could you take a couple minutes and describe what a moral rebel is?
Yes. So, and this is not my term. This is a term that's widely used in psychology, but I think it really speaks to what I'm trying to get across. And so a moral rebel is somebody who feels comfortable standing up to the crowd, who feels comfortable potentially facing, you know, awkwardness or embarrassment or feeling stupid, but feels comfortable doing that. And in fact, is very willing to speak out and call out bad behavior. That could be somebody, for example, who's a whistleblower, somebody who reports on bad behavior happening in their place of work. It could be somebody who stands up on public transportation and says, you know, stop using that racial slur or that, you know, sexist language. So a moral rebel is basically someone who is not a bystander, who is willing to step up and challenge bad behavior of all types and doesn't seem to experience the same social inhibition factors that lead most people to stay silent in the face of bad behavior of all types.
So are these moral rebels born or made, and how can we make more of them? Because obviously it would be beneficial if there were more of them.
The short answer is yes and yes. They are born and they are made. And I think that's what's encouraging. So are they born? Partially. It does seem to be that moral rebels differ in some ways that probably are genetically determined. There's some research looking at MRI data, brain imaging data, suggesting that their parts of their brain are in fact different, in particular parts that process empathy and other connection. So on some level, people may be born with sort of a predisposition to be more or less of a moral rebel. But what's encouraging, as you just noted, because we would like to create more of them, what's encouraging is that we can all learn skills and strategies that can inspire our inner moral rebel, even if we're not naturally predisposed. One finding that as a parent of a 16-year-old daughter, I found very encouraging was that research has shown that children who argue with their parents actually tend to be better at standing up to bad behavior. And what the researchers believe is that children get good at arguing with mom and dad, confronting their own, you know, rights and decisions about responsibilities. And that practice with arguing with your parents lets you develop skills in sticking up for yourself that you can then use to apply in peer situations where you might be pressured to do something that you don't want to do. So that's an example of how we can actually create moral rebels. I think other things that we can do include fostering empathy, getting people to be better at perspective taking, helping people understand the psychological factors that inhibit people from acting. And I think it's also important to know that many people want to speak up, want to do something, but they don't feel they have the tools or strategies. So in chapter 10, I actually discuss at length all of the different things that you can do that can help give you the confidence to speak up. And it's not one size fits all. There are certain strategies that may be more useful to reporting unethical behavior in a workplace, and others that may be more appropriate to use if you are at the Thanksgiving dinner table and your great uncle uses a racist slur or something. So the idea is that empowering people by teaching them what they can do should give people more confidence in speaking up at the time.
So are there things that organizations and their cultures do that suppress moral rebelliousness? I mean, obviously, if people are seeing people getting punished for raising ethics issues, that's going to be a real suppression of any kind of willingness to step up. But are there more subtle things out there that organizations may do or that are pervasive in a culture that keep people from raising their hand and speaking up?
Yes, there are. And I think that's an excellent point. And I think one of the first things to remember is that the term whistleblower, in fact, has really negative connotations. You know, it describes somebody who's not particularly respected or liked in many senses. And so one important step is to make sure that reporting on bad behavior is not associated with being ostracized, with experiencing negative consequences, that we are expecting that people will do so and that we appreciate it and we value it. But I also think there are lots of subtle things that organizations can do that make a difference. So things like having an ethical leader go a really long way. So making sure that whoever's in charge is in fact showing ethical behavior, that really encourages people behaving ethically themselves because it's being modeled. I also think it's important to sweat the small stuff, that sometimes people overlook small acts of bad behavior, and that tends to lead them to escalate. So organizations that sort of look the other way, if somebody's a star or somebody's making a lot of money, in fact, can lead people to think, oh, well, it's not a big deal if I do this, if I cut this corner in some way. So I think it's really important that we change our structure and our attitude about people who report bad behavior, and that we try to identify people who can model responsible, ethical, moral behavior in all organizations.
Well, and I think it's also going to be interesting to see what happens as we, well, hopefully soon emerge from this pandemic, as ethical issues have come to the forefront and companies have spent a lot more time discussing, thinking about, and ideally acting on what's the right thing to do in this situation. Hopefully it'll free up a dialogue that lasts for quite some time on what is the right thing to do and makes it easier for people to raise these issues. Well, Professor Sanderson, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.